Blog Talk Radio.
To Twisted Tuesdays with the Twisted Sisters, and you never know, maybe a Twisted Mister or two. Hey, Pam, how are you tonight?
Oh, I am doing great. How are you doing?
Well, so far, so good. So far, so
awesome.
Good.
Awesome.
Yeah. So tell us.
My kid came in like a minute before the show was going to start. To tell me that she just had a 2-minute stare down with the little fat squirrel that's been running around our house.
Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Oh, but she was very excited about it. And now I'm not 100% sure because she said, well, the tail is different than a squirrel. It's shorter. And then she says, and it's kind of too fat to be a squirrel. I said, well, the fat part could be explained by the fact that he's been living in our house for the past month eating our food. But...
oh, my God.
So that's the excitement. Yeah, right? But that's the excitement of the Ray household right now.
I can relate. I've had a stare down with the squirrel once, maybe twice. Yes. The one I was feeding, you know, the one I raised with a bottle. And I went to move the basket, and he got peeved at me. I said, well, that's just time for you to go. It's time for you to move out, you know.
Yeah, there's a time when you just got to say, okay, you are no longer a pet. You are going out in the wild.
If you are dumb enough to you know, kind of growl, snarl, any word you want to use for it, because squirrels have a different sound system. The hand that feeds you, time to go, man, time to go. You're too big for your britches now. And he did. He left. See ya. Right on the end of, actually, I wrapped him up in a towel and carried him out front and put him down. Said, have a nice day. Put his food out there for
him. He doesn't have time.
Yep. No, I ain't taking on a scrub. It's pissed. You know.
Yeah,
I know how
they
are when they clap. You're happy. Yeah.
Oh, they can be mean little SOBs.
Yes, they can. And, you know, when they're in a good mood and they climb up your leg to sit on your shoulder, you know, you can feel that they're powerful little things. You know, and I used to wrestle around with some of them. They are characters for sure. So, listen, let's talk about the show tonight. What do we got going on? Because we have three shows waiting on this.
Well, today, January 17th, is the 223rd birthday of Anne Bronte. So I decided that I would run a contest with quotes and poem lines from Anne Bronte and, you know, let people be inspired by that. And we got quality and quantity. Now, most people have a general idea of who Anne Bronte is. You know, she's one of the trio of the Bronte sisters. Charlotte, Emily, and Anne were all well-known authors. You know, Anne was actually the youngest of the three girls and the youngest of a total of six children. And her mother died when she was only 20 months old. I've got some interesting facts about Anne Bronte. She did work as a governess, which is what her first book, Agnes Grey, was about. It was not a book about her life, but her life inspired it, because the main character was a governess like she was. Critics were shocked by her second and final. She actually died at the age of 29. Her second and final book, The Tenant of Wildfell Hall, had a daring plot line for the time. The plot line at the time was a woman's calamitous marriage to an alcoholic husband and her efforts to escape with her son. A daring plot line for a time when women had no legal status independent of their husbands. The book did sell well, but reviewers were appalled by the novel's frank depiction of debauchery and marital strife. Anne said her purpose in writing the novel, she explained, was simply to tell the truth, for truth always conveys its own morals to those who are able to receive it. Now, she did publish her book under the name of Acton Bell, which was a common thing, actually, for that time period, for women to use a pseudonym of a man or a gender-neutral name. And one of her books, I can't remember which one, she defended... she shut down speculation about Acton Bell's gender. Concluding her preface to Wildfell Hall, Anne noted that some of her critics professed to have discovered that the author of the novel was a woman. She would not confirm or deny the rumors because, she explained, the subject was irrelevant. I am satisfied that if a book is a good one, Anne wrote, it is so whatever the sex of the author may be. And, and she was a staunch feminist for the time. And one last fun fact about Anne, and then we'll see if we have any callers, and we'll move forward with the poetry, and is that one of her last acts was that just 2 days before her death, she defended a donkey. Her and her sister and a cousin were taking a ride in a carriage being pulled by a donkey, and she felt that the driver was pushing the donkey too hard, urging it to go too fast, and so she took the reins and drove herself.
Well, there you go.
And that was just, and then 2 days later, she died of tuberculosis.
Oh,
what was that?
Nothing. I chuckled and I said, "Oh wow, there we go."
Yeah.
There you go.
Yep. I love those fun facts like that. I always think it's so cool.
Absolutely.
But
Okay.
And
well,
what do we have any callers, Jean?
We have three callers. We had one before we even, like, started the show, and that was Blue Harrison. So welcome to the party, Blue Harrison. It's always good to have you here.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. I'm glad to be here.
Very cool.
Glad you could be
and
here.
And then we have Laurent, who's also joining us. Hello, Laurent.
Good evening, mother of squirrels. Hey, Pam. Hey, Naomi.
Hey, good to have you here.
Thank you.
Last but never least, we have Randy G on the line. Hello, Randy.
Randy.
Hello,
hello
everyone. Yes,
you.
I'm not the father of squirrels, but I'm glad to be here.
Well, this week Pam is the mother of squirrels. I'm the squirrel whisperer, I think.
Yeah, I'm hoping to be. I don't know if mother squirrels is the right term because I plan on capturing this squirrel and throwing it outside. So,
I'm telling you, they're squirrely though. They're hard to get. Hard to
right.
Buy a nice cheese and set up a trap.
Yeah, we just have sunflower seeds.
They love sunflower seeds.
Ah, there
Kevin,
you go.
Kevin, have you seen white squirrels?
White squirrels? Yeah.
White. Yeah, white squirrels.
I have not actually, no.
Yeah, I have. We had, when I worked at the nursing home, at the end of the driveway, there was a cluster of trees. And there was a white squirrel, I assume it's the same squirrel, that was there for quite a few years. And you would see him running across the back. And it was so, it always would catch your eye because it just looked odd, you know. But, yes, they're pretty neat looking.
Well, in Brevard, North Carolina, there's a whole community of white squirrels.
Oh, well. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
That is.
I saw them. They're larger than normal squirrels, and they're awesome looking.
Good guy squirrels.
Yeah. There you go. That's really cool. I did not know that they lived in communities of white squirrels. I just figured they were just kind of an oddity that just kind of came into being with the others. Never did I think about a community of them. But, hey, you know, you get the right gene pool.
Are they considered albino or are they simply white?
No, they don't call them albino at all. They're white squirrels. They have a couple of different origin stories, but there is a concentration of them in Brevard, North Carolina, which is northwest North Carolina in the mountain area. I've seen them, like, a lot of them. I vacationed up there a couple times, so they're amazing. They're just beautiful.
Right. That's really cool.
And as a consequence, I have a little white squirrel collection myself, and I'm not a collector, but I had to do that.
Yeah, sometimes you're just drawn to it. Absolutely. Okay, Pam. Let's kick it back to you.
All right. Well, we'll go ahead and get started with, of course, a classic poem by Anne Bronte titled A Voice from the Dungeon. And, Laurent, would you do the honor of reading that for us, please?
I'd be pleased. A Voice from the Dungeon. I'm buried now. I've done with life. I've done with hate, revenge, and strife. I've done with joy and hope and love, and all the bustling world above. Long have I dwelt forgotten here, in pining woe and dull despair. This place of solitude and gloom must be my dungeon and my tomb. No hope, no pleasure can I find. I am grown weary of my mind. Often in balmy sleep I try to gain a rest from misery, and in 1 hour of calm repose to find a respite from my woes. The dreamless sleep is not for me, and I am still in misery. I dream of liberty, 'tis true, but then I dream of sorrow too, of blood and guilt and horrid woes, of tortured friends and happy foes. I dream about the world, but then I dream of fiends instead of men. Each smiling hope so quickly fades, and such a lurid gloom pervades. That world, that when I wake and see, those dreary phantoms fade and flee. Even in my dungeon I can smile, and taste of joy a little while. And yet it is not always so. I dreamt a little while ago that all was as it used to be. A fresh, free wind passed over me. It was a pleasant summer's day. The sun shone forth with cheering ray. Methought a little lovely child looked up into my face and smiled. My heart was full. I wept for joy. It was my own, my darling boy. I clasped him to my breast, and he kissed me and laughed in childish glee. Just then I heard a whisper sweet, a well-known voice my name repeat. His father stood before my eyes. I gazed at him in mute surprise. I thought he smiled and spoke to me, but still in silent ecstasy I gazed at him. I could not speak. I uttered one long, piercing shriek. Alas, alas, that cursed scream aroused me from my heavenly dream. I looked around in wild despair. I called them, but they were not there. The father and the child are gone, and I must live and die alone. Many a Sabia. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Yeah, it wasn't actually really easy for me to pick out a poem. I mean, obviously, it made sense with the topic of the show that I was going to choose an Anne Bronte poem. I thought about the one, her poem called The Night, because those poem lines were actually the ones that most inspired people to write to the contest. But I found myself drawn to this write. I thought it had a strong emotional impact. It greatly showcased her talent. And it's a wonderful write that almost has like a dreamlike quality to it, but at the same time touches on a realist. It's like a great combination of both romanticism and realism. And I like how she brings us into what can be a literal dungeon or what can be a dungeon of the mind. And that's kind of where the way how I lean towards is the idea of a dungeon of the mind or the heart when, you know, one suffers grief and loss. So, and Blue, what are your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, I couldn't find it on the site here, so I listened closely to his reading, which was absolutely phenomenal, I might say. The poem, to me, speaks mostly of emotional remembrance. And any poem that is emotional will speak to me loudly, because that's where I come from. So, and that the poem also incorporates the rhyme, but in an old classic style, is also very endearing to me. I found it very, very lilting. And I don't assign that to very many poems. So I will assign it here. It was very lilting, and it definitely was in a voice that I would absolutely assign to Anne Bronte.
Yes, great. great observation there. I think little thing is a perfect word choice to describe that poem. Very cool. And Randy, your thoughts on this classic poem?
Yes, I agree that that was a wonderful read, Brent. You know, I was kind of amazed as it went on, and I read along with it, that despite the fact that it's a rather serious and heavy subject matter, the rhyme and meter of it made it very pleasant to read. It flowed very well, and I really enjoyed it. I'll just pick out one stanza because they're all exceptionally good, but I like the, I dream of liberty, 'tis true, but then I dream of sorrow too, of blood and guilt and horrid woes, of tortured friends and happy foes. I mean, that flows so lightly and reads so easily that throughout the whole poem, it was sometimes easy to forget that it was really written on a rather heavy subject matter. But I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very good.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And Lauren, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is a great piece. The rhyme that Blue talked about initially is one of the appealing things to me, because I really grew up in a world where poetry was rhyming poetry. It wasn't until I was about 16 that I actually read series free verse and fell in love with that as well. And this does justice to the entire world of rhyme, as was mentioned previous. Wonderful flow, the rhythm, the meter, I mean, it's top-notch. To find that the one thing that could set her free from what she describes as an existence of pining woe and dull despair, and I love the stanza that Randy quoted because it exactly names all the things that she is so miserable about, to find that it could all be relieved by a father and a child in her life, was the timing of releasing that statement was pretty stunning. It made the entire poem just crystallize immediately for me, and I must live and die alone. It's just a wonderful work.
Definitely, definitely. I have to agree. Wonderful comments, everybody. Thank you. All right, and moving on, Randy, I've gone ahead and put up your poem. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
Okay. Mine is based on the prompt of the quote that's right above the poem. The poem is The Silent Hours. I love the silent hours, the deep darkness night, to encourage dreams to fill my head with surreal sights, taking me to places I might otherwise never have seen. My mind becomes an active Technicolor movie screen. He introduced me to colorful people and or creatures, most captivating individuals with otherworldly features. Taking my imagination, they parade through my mind, some unusual and frightening beings of various kinds. While others seem quite pleasant, pleasing to the soul, with colors ranging from a brilliant white to black as coal, and everything in between, most defying the description, like some mysterious hieroglyphics without decryption. Despite all these odd visions and their strange themes, I long for the dark of night, to sleep, perchance to dream, where visions reveal themselves in a colorful disguise that can't be seen in the light of day with my open eyes. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Randy. I'm glad you were inspired. And Lauren, your thoughts?
This is quite good. I love the prompt. I love the way Randy approached the prompt. The language to me is very classical, yet it has a flavor of the modern, certainly with phrases like active Technicolor movie screen. but it's a great metaphor for what can be seen in vivid dreams, if we are lucky enough to encounter a vivid dream. I love the inclusion of the Shakespeare, I long for the dark of night, to sleep, perchance to dream. That's very nice, as is the poem. Nice job, Randy.
Thank you, Lorraine.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, I just left the actual comment on that. But Randy's narration on this poem is very decadent to me. The rhyme sings, and it's very sensuously inviting. It invites the reader into the depths of what he is saying. So, yeah, kudos there.
Thank you, Blue.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, this did have, I have to agree with Lauren, it has a very classical feel with its rhyme and its word choices. It's a great take on the chosen prompt. I like how it speaks on the idea of how not only things look different, but it's because our dreaming mind perceives things differently, or even our awake mind during nighttime, there seems to be a way that it perceives the shadowed world differently than it perceives the lighted world. And I really like, while others seem quite pleasant, pleasing to the soul, the colors ranging from brilliant white to black as coal and everything in between, most defying a description, like some mysterious hieroglyphics without decryption. I thought that was a wonderful way to describe how different things look and translate in the evening. A great rhyme and flow as always, wonderful imagery, and a real true embracing of nighttime and the blessings that come with it. And, you know, so excellent writing, very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And, of course, you're welcome to stay with us as long as you can, as always.
I will.
Yeah. Wonderful, wonderful. Thank you very much. All right. I put in Late Night Poets, A Word from Anne Bronte by Mandy42. And, Blue, could you give that a read for us, please?
Which one, please?
A Word from Anne Bronte, and while you're looking for that, Jean, do we have any other callers on the line?
Not yet.
Not yet, okay.
Not yet.
All right.
Blue, I just sent you a note. I'm sorry if you got it.
Yeah. Blue, you can actually see the poem links being posted in Late Night Poets. Sometimes you have to be like refresh your page in order to see the
latest. I got it. A Word from Anne Bronte from Mandy 42. We got it?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. And he took me to the bottom of the river. There I settled. No chance of coming up for air. I always stayed where he needed me. But he never saw my highlights. Even when I was submerged, my accent, my tone, how sunlight reflected off me like I was an iridescent opal. The jewel, for the most discerning of gem hunters. Too late, he had his heart beating realization and ran back to claim me, sweat in his swallow, his boots scattering yards of rock. So frantic was the soul. Thank God, he said, you're still here. I'm ready to love you now. His laugh brayed, shaky, all teeth, a no smile. And I tried kind, told him he was no longer golden, that I should have been diamond, but he bit. Dawn, and only found quartz, a distorted shape he could find anywhere, blending with shadowy drifts, with minnow, with evolutions of frogs. And I said to him, do you remember? I told you. Quartz are universal, a stand-in for any other stone. I was willing to be the unpolished edge, the unsatisfactory, pressed against the cravat of his button through breath. But I was more, a dying star while he searched for rich veins and constellations on cold planets. And he said to me, I know, I know, I see it now. The moon really is dark when the moon isn't there to make her shine. But there was no John Keats in this recitation. My eyes were blackbirds and my feet had already made tracks from the bulrush. It matters little. Why I stayed so long, comparing myself to planets burrowing deep and clenching and unclenching palm. End poem.
Great read there, Blue. Thank you very much. And a beautiful write by Mandy42. Before we continue forward with commenting, I'd like to welcome Naomi to the show. Welcome, Naomi. Glad you could be here.
Hello. Hello, guys. Hello, everybody. I don't know who's there, but hello, everybody.
Well, we have, of course, Jean. We have Randy. We have Lauren. And we have Blue Harrison.
So, wow.
Nice,
okay.
Nice party. Yes.
Wow. Yeah. Anne Bronte is an amazing, amazing author and poet. So, yeah.
Yes.
It doesn't surprise
me. I remember you mentioning. Yeah, I remember you mentioning that you liked her.
Yeah, the Bronte sisters. Part of my teenage years when I growing up.
Very cool. And Randy, let's start with your thoughts on this poem.
Well, I thought it was a very good write by Mandy42. I especially like the stanza that I should have been a diamond, but he bit down and only found quartz, a distorted shape he found, and he could find anywhere, blending with shadowy drifts, with minnow, with evolutions of frogs. And I said to him, do you remember? I told you, quartz are universal. I stand in for any other stone. I stand in for any other stone. I was willing to be that unpolished edge. You know, the cry in that stanza of her to be accepted and being willing and there for someone who didn't appreciate her and was looking for a diamond when she was quartz. So, yeah, I thought it was a wonderful poem, and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, absolutely. And I like your observation that you made there. Very cool. And Naomi, did you get a chance to hear or to read this poem by Mandy42?
Yeah, well, I read it earlier, and my gracious, it just blew me away. You know, right from that first stanza, and he took me to the bottom of the river. There I settled. No chance of coming up for air. I always stayed where he needed me. You know, and he never saw my highlights. You know, just from the first, those first few lines, she just captured me. And, you know, the way she uses the gems in the poem as metaphors. Just wonderful. You know, this is so relatable, this poem, to so many, you know, people out there. You know, when you're in this relationship and the other person just doesn't see you till it's too late. And, yeah, very relatable poem, awesomely well written, and just a beautiful, beautiful write here by Mandy. I just love this poem.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, yeah. It's as you said, just beautifully written. Great comment. And Lawrence, your thoughts?
I thought this was a hugely impressive work. I can see Bronte in each stanza yet distinctly in the poet's voice. The phrasing is very powerful and sadly regretful that realization came to him too late. The image of the clenching and unclenching hand perfectly mirrors the way he maintained the relationship, basically blind to her qualities. This is a lovely poem to read several times, right off the bat, just for pure appreciation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree with you. She does beautifully capture Anne Bronte's voice with this poem. It's just a brilliant imagery and metaphors throughout. And Blue, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts is this is a truth string. This is not mere, you know, I'm going to write something for poetry. This is streaming of pure truth thought. That first stanza that hits and that burrows in, I know where she's coming from. I definitely know where she's coming from. And everything else that follows, she just wants to be seen. She just wants to be noticed. She just wants to be recognized. But you know what? She's not going to, because he took me to the bottom of the river. That's it. That's it. And, I can't say enough about this poetry. I think not only does she echo Anne Bronte's spirit, but she brings to life what, you know, Anne Bronte would really appreciate. I think that this is brought to life here, and it just blew me away. This poetry.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well said there. Wonderful comments, everybody. All right, let's see what we have next. All right. I'm so glad that so many people were inspired for this contest. Like I was saying, like I like to say, quality and quantity. So, very cool lineup. And up next, we have The Warmth of Gypsy Winds by Way Down Upon Joy. And Naomi, would you give that a read for us, please?
Okay, The Warmth of Gypsy Winds. My dreaming world is blessed with bliss that like the wind can drift to all those spaces that reveal a paradisal place. The faces of those loving forms that warm my graveyard shift, engraving in my memory good-heartedness and grace. It's not a case of where or when I'll come to realize the wonder of delightfulness that seems to crystallize, then fill my nights insightfully beyond my waking eyes. And like the warmth of gypsy winds, revive a memory trace. Perhaps it's in a lifelike dream that spring-like seeds can grow, then carry all throughout the day without hyperbole. It's in my silent mind, I note, a life of love should flow, and just how sweet the world would be when left to just be free. The silent side of show me life is wonderment revealed, that much like dreams and gypsy winds share mystery unsealed. So in that space, odd lovers lean into fate's worldly field, and like the warmth of gypsy winds, they wake a world for me. End poem.
Great read there, Naomi. This is an absolutely stunning rhyming poem by Way Down Upon Joy. She wrote to the prompt, I love the silent hour of night, for blissful dreams may then arise, revealing to my charmed sight what may not bless my waking eyes. Yeah, I thought this was just a beautiful, which was, as I was mentioning earlier, the most chosen prompt. People really connected with this one. And I like how this speaks on the beauty of nighttime and the beauty of the dreaming mind and all the possibilities that are out there. And it's beautiful all the way through, having another one that has a very classic feel to it. But I particularly like it where she says, it's in my silent mind, I know it, a life of love should flow. And just how sweet that world would be when left to just be free. The silent side of show me life is wonderment revealed. It's taking time, step away from the flashy and those things that demand our attention, and look at those things that are a part of the mystery of life. So beautifully written and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Bronte seems to bring out the rhyme in people, and Joy does a wonderful job of it. The faces of those loving forms that warm my graveyard shift. There's a couple of places in the poem where she speaks of loving forms, and odd lovers is the other one. So in that space, odd lovers lean into fate's worldly field. She extracts delight and joy in those dreams, in the dreaming world, a world that's filled with bliss, and wishes desperately that it could carry over into real life. And it seems to me that with the inclusion of odd lovers, again, there is a world in which a bond that is absent in the real world has been established in the dream world. And that is everything to her. It's beautifully written.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And Blue, your thoughts.
Okay. First to negative, Gypsy Winds. She not only puts it in her title, but she mentions it three times in the poem body. I think that's a little bit much for me. I do definitely appreciate her ending couplet. So in that space, odd lovers lean into fate's worldly field, and like the warmth of gypsy winds, they wake a world for me. I think that embodies everything of what she's trying to say in that poem. I just wish she would have buried a little bit more from Gypsy Winds.
Yeah, I can see what you're saying. I guess, you know, each to their own, and, you know, I figure she probably had a reason why for her it was important to maybe that phrase just particularly meant something to her, or she felt it was a way it strengthened the poem. But, yeah, I do appreciate your personal thoughts there, and thank you very much. Thank you.
No problem.
And let's see. Who haven't I asked? I think Naomi, you read the poem, so I haven't asked you yet. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Well, me, I'm kind of so you go leading the other way. I read the poem, and every time I said that phrase, and like the gypsy wind, I don't know. I just love that. I didn't feel it was overdone. I felt like it added something to the poem. It added a lightheartedness, a soft sensuality to the whole rite, which I really, really, loved. I just love this poem, you know, the whole flow of it. It's just superb. It's beautiful, well thought out, and it's just so dreamy-like in such a way. Like I said, airy and free and has that soft sensuality to it. So such a beautiful, beautiful rite here.
Absolutely. Yes. Wonderful comments, everybody. Thank you so much. And let's see what we have next. And it's good to see Stelina hanging on the board. I don't know if he's in the background, but I know oftentimes Damn It Dave is listening in. So I'll say hi to him in case he is. Though he's been listening so much lately, he might be taking a night off. And all right, up next we have Condor Candor by Eric Svensson. And wow, that's a tongue twister of a title. All right, and we do have a SoundCloud for this, so whenever you're ready, Gene.
Condor Candor, paid pernicious feathers, tweak mighty condor wingtips, pan flute al condor passer, spellbound by Peruvian interlude, illustrious scavenger calligraphy upon invisible thermals, inscribes a land lover's heart space expansion. Headspace reels in thin, high-altitude air. Condor candor scripts golden, gilded scrolls. Prophets of doom have a sense of humor. Exfoliation of metastasized metropolis. Lungs adjust to rare, thin air purity. Boisterous banter of bright-eyed children beguiles, imposes like sunshine on snow-capped peaks. Dormant inner Icarus awakes, drifts upwards, becomes a pernicious end feather. Prophets of doom have a sense of humor. If you can dream it, you can do it. Apply condor candor. Colloquious energy currents your scroll. Golden gilded wishes unfurl. Bread for the hungry, water for the parched. Wide wondrous wing expansion of heart space. Scavenger headspace erased, high altitude rarefied air bubbles Perrier, snowflakes cartwheel chill chablis, rain stick pan flute and condor candor, mind neander curtailed, heart space expands further, a new GPS found, God clear spark activated, scavenger headspace erased, frowns of court jester clowns fade, prophets of hope script infallible golden gilded scrolls. End poem.
Wonderful read and write there, Eric. And thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Just a friendly reminder, everyone, if you're unable to call in, then the next best thing is to make a recording of your poem, because then we get to hear your poetry in your voice. And Lauren, start with your thoughts.
Certainly. In Peru, the condor flies, and he's taken the condor as that symbol of freedom. And incidentally, I think he has been to every different venue that he writes about, because he's been all over the world in his poetry, but in such a way that I believe he's quite a traveler. And I can kind of see that in this as well, when he says, exfoliation, a metastasized metropolis, lungs are just a rare, thin air, purity, boisterous banter of bright-eyed children, beguiles, and on. It's just a sense that he's an observer who has his own unique style, magnificent vocabulary, and the ability to force images into your head that might not have found their way otherwise. I've often wondered what a poet like Bronte or any of the other poets of that age would think if they read a poet, a piece of poetry like this. There are parts of it they probably love, parts they might not understand, parts they might dislike, but either way, I like what Eric does, and this is a fine piece.
Absolutely, and I like what you brought up there. I imagine poets like the Brontes and other classic poets of that era would be simultaneously intrigued and appalled at some of the stuff that comes out in the 20th century, the modern times. It would be interesting, though, to see. Great observation there. And Naomi, your thoughts?
Yeah, I just love Eric's, originality, his creativity, his ability to go where few people go. High altitude, rarefied, air-bubbled, Perrier, snowflakes, cartwheels, chilled chablis. I just love it. And then he goes into a new GPS found. And, at the end, court jesters, clowns fade. I just love his ability to take you where you never expect to go with Eric. But I just love, if you can dream it, you can do it. Apply condor candor. He really says it there in that line. But, bread for the hungry, water for the parched, wide, wondrous wing, expansion of heart space. I know his use of alliteration, of course, is just phenomenal every time. And, I really like this, this explosion of imagination here on the page from Eric. Always a joy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, I listened to the read, obviously, and that second stanza, the Icarus reference there, I'm a big believer in mythology, so that snapped me awake there a little bit, and I like where he goes with that. I like that. I think his language may be a little out of reach for a lot of people. I'm speaking from one that, has been there with language that's out of reach. He definitely has a lot of good stuff in here with his poetry. I feel like I got a little lost in there. with the candor and being, obviously repetition is the thing for me, and I don't think it's a thing for everybody, but I don't know. I'm on the border on this one, but I do appreciate his read. He's awesome with his read, and he puts across a lot in his poetry that I can identify with Anne Bronte, for sure. But there's something missing there for me.
Great observations. And that's the thing with poetry, is everybody has their things that attract them to poetry, and, they're things that they shy away from. And that's one of the reasons it's so great that we have such a variety of poets writing for our shows, is that then and there's a variety of offerings. I really like his use of alliteration, the imagery and metaphors he puts out. There's certain parts in here that just make me smile, like prophets of doom have a sense of humor. I thought that was just a clever twist on the phrase, God has a sense of humor. And you just imagine the kind of sense of humor that prophets of doom would have. It's almost like an irony in itself. I really like also that.
That first stanza is the one that hits me. That first stanza is the one that hits me, definitely. And you highlight the ending line from that. That is definitely the first stanza. I think this would have been a more persuasive poetry for me if it was more brief. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, I get that. And I like how this speaks about learning to, like he wrote to the prompt, my soul is awakened, my spirit is soaring and carried aloft on the wings of the breeze. And it almost feels like the whole idea of having the kind of mind and heart that learns to soar above, having a positive attitude and learning to soar above the naysayers. I really also like the imagery of scavenger head space erased, high altitude rarefied air bubbles, Perrier, snowflaked cartwheel, chilled Chablis. Wonderful, wonderful lines and excellent write. And let's see what we have next. All right, up next we have Poison's Cup by Liquid Mind Forever. And I'll go ahead and give that one a read. And it goes like this. And no one comes to this moldy shadow box, not the pigeons, not the bees, nor the gnats. No one comes, not with water, not with time-release granules, not with words of encouragement. Beneath lie poison's temptation. Rappuccini limbs are like burned leaves, curled, bloodless, deceiving thieves, quick-tempered, mirthless, impartial. Rain hesitates. Somehow, intuitively, it knows. If it moves too close, it will be sucked up into mundane experience with only the return promise of death. Even icicles fall from bulging veins, remaining impotent. Instinctively, at the root of its diabolical creation, it knows the core heat, knows not discreet, and refuses to lose sacrifices to stigmata. Beauty, purple flushed rushes in hushed temptation, parallel initiation, emanciation's promise. Conflagration yearns to burn, tries to spurn, but at its heart discerns the grandeur of an interlude of sun, momentarily stunned, must instantly shun what's its only salvation, as clouds find their shadows looming behind gates of budding opportunity. They've been groomed not to presume, rather assumes purity resides at the root of decimation, cremation, consumes, leaving palest doom. Dry veins drink not of love's potion. Poison's cup is the victor's drink. Can a chink in death's armor release indentured sisters to open for a brief moment to imbibe of revitalizing breath, her mouth and lips pressed against the pale moon's tincture, and willingly I die for one taste, one touch, one kiss of forbidden rapture. Purple flows the brown ground of profanity and insanity. Drunk with passion's longing, I come on to the flush of youth, open flesh upon flesh to swallow the mystery of poison's life. End poem. And she wrote to the prompt, his heart was like a sensitive plant that opens for a moment in the sunshine, but curls up and shrinks into itself at the slightest touch of the finger of the lightest breath of wind. And Laurent, your thoughts. Are you with us, Laurent? Am I with us? Well,
you are, Pam. You are.
I am. Okay. And all right. Well, I know, let's see, Laurent had to step away. Naomi had to go. She had something going on in Portland. So, so Jean, your thoughts on this poem?
Okay, let me find myself. I was trying to get one together.
Oh, no problem.
This is a wonderfully penned piece by Deborah. Incredible ending lines. I kind of came in here on the last deck, the list. Yeah, you know the words. Anyway, and willingly I die for one taste, one touch, one kiss of forbidden rapture. Purple flows in the brown ground of profanity's insanity. Drunk with passion's longing, I come on to the flesh of youth, open, flesh upon flesh, to swallow the mystery of poison's life. Something about that ending just really, I thought was so well done and so wonderfully worded. I mean, there's so many great lines throughout, but I didn't, you know, sometimes you have to go with what just strikes you. And that one really did, that section there just really struck me as just being so good. So wonderful job, Deborah, and great take on the prompt. So, well, much enjoyed, for sure.
Absolutely. And I like that section that you pointed out. It had really stunning imagery and metaphors all the way through. It was a powerful write that to me speaks strongly on feminism and sexuality. I really like her use, as she often does, with great use of inner and end rhyme. Moment to imbibe of revitalizing breath from mouth and lips pressed against the pale moon's tincture, and as clouds find their shadows looming behind gates of budding opportunity, they've been groomed not to presume, rather assumes purity resides at the root of decimation. I like how this speaks on the assumptions that people make about what is good and what is evil. At least that's kind of what I read into it. Powerful lines and very well done. And Laurent, did you get a chance to read the poem Poison's Cup by Liquid Mind Forever?
Oh, yes, I did. And I've got to say that your comment really nails a number of things in this piece that I like. I am always so touched is the wrong word, amazed, gratified by her use of language and the way she phrases things. And she has an insight that I It is, I wish I had, let's put it that way. Number five, especially, was a favorite. Poison's cup is the victor's drink. Can it chink in death's armor, release indentured sisters to open for a brief moment to imbibe a revitalizing breath from mouth and lips pressed against the pale moon's tincture. She is saying so much in those six lines. And that ending, I come out of the flush of youth, open flesh upon flesh to swallow the mystery of poison's life. And she goes right back to the victor's drink. What she wants is deadly. It's poison. It's a forbidden rapture, as she said. Wonderful piece.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well said there. And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, I'm going to echo him. That stanza five is the standout for me. Poison's cup and ending with moon's tincture. What I see here is, and what I hear here is someone that knows they're giving themselves up in the name of love. And it's not going to end well. I see that, and I hear that, and I know that. Can a chink in death's armor release indentured sisters? That is saying, can my, you know, release to you, can my subservience to you release me, and I won't be enslaved for you in eternity. And, I mean, all of this is beautiful. All of this is beautiful. But that stanza five, which everybody before me has highlighted, that is definitely the anchor of this whole poetry. And it's just gorgeous. It's just emotional, real, beautiful, and relevant to Anne Bronte. That's what I have to say.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're right. It is very relevant to Bronte, and especially her feminist and voice, and her ability to, as she had said in her own words, speak the truth, you know, even if other people don't accept it. So, excellent observation. And all right, let's see what we have next. All right, Lawrence, I've put your poem up. Go ahead and give it a read for us, please.
I will. And if Blue does not like repetition, I'm out of luck on this one, I guess. Well, look, there's purposeful repetition, and there's incidental repetition, and there's sloppy repetition. Inattention.
I agree with you totally.
All right, this is tongue in cheek, dear. Don't take offense. I'm laughing. I understand exactly what you were saying. Sometimes, though, a phrase, the poet falls in love with its phrase, and it just keeps popping up. Oh, I love it. I'm going to use it. At any rate, the prompt, of course, my soul is awakened, my spirit is soaring and carried aloft on the wings of the breeze. And this is called Pale Butterfly. Scrap of yellow linen tossed to the sky. Soft focus resolving to details. Epic endeavor to live. Pale butterfly veering, yawing. Such a tiny body. Such large wings damaged by storm. Tattered silk against the purity of summer's blue. Pale butterfly struggles, so light she flies with Homeric effort, galvanized by need, winds of obligation to be followed. Pale butterfly darts, a broken dance in air, suggestions of a minuet in its movement, slewing to a silent song. Pale butterfly alight, a petal damask of turquoise and orange, her final encounter, halting steps, takes its goodness pale butterfly, little leg taster, frozen and prayerful that stands. Slight carving, soon desiccated, weighing nothing. Gentle zephyrs caress still wings, gathering you up. Final flight, taking you home. Pale butterfly, I hold you in my eye. End poem.
Wonderful read and write, Lawrence. I'm so glad you were inspired. This has beautiful imagery. I feel like it has the type of imagery and metaphors that Anne Bronte would use, but beautifully put in free verse. I thought it was, and you both, you and Blue both made a really good point, and I have to agree with you that they're, you know, the purposeful repetition, you know, that serves a purpose and strengthens the poem can be a beautiful thing and be used as a wonderful literary device. I like that with Fitness Right, you follow this pale butterfly, this butterfly that is so delicate and yet so strong, a metaphor for life and death. I really was drawn to the part, pale butterfly struggles so light, she flies with Homeric effort, galvanized by need, wind of obligation to be followed. I thought, how very cool, how just to have this delicate butterfly that will live for no more, like less than a year, and to go on this Homer-like odyssey across land and across waters, and then that beautiful bittersweet ending, you know, pale butterfly, I hold you in my eye, just the representation here of a short yet meaningful life, in this pale butterfly, I think just really gives the poem an emotional impact. So great write and very well done.
Thank you.
And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, Laurent did a fantastic reading of this. I want to say that first. And yeah, there is a lot of repetition in here with the pale butterfly, but repetition is not necessarily a bad thing if it's done right. He anchors his poem with that repetition. He anchors it. So that is, everything. He swings from light to heavy with his verbiage, epic, tiny. There's a swing right there. Homerific, obligation, galvanized. That's all heavy. Dance, minuet, song. That's all light. So he balances all the way through this. All the way through this, I see balance, I hear balance, and I feel balance. And that makes all the difference. So, he repeats, but the repetition works here because the repetition is like the center. And he balances that center with the heavy in the light. And I love that. I love it.
It's a great comment. Thank you, Blue.
Absolutely. I like how you mentioned how he balances out the poem. Very cool observation there. And before we move on to the next write, Jean, do we have another caller?
Well, we do. We have Weaver of Dreams with us.
Hey, Kate. How are you tonight?
Kate. Hello, I'm here. I'm fine. How are you all?
Doing great.
Good evening, Katie.
Good evening, my dear. Good evening, Pam. Good evening. Who else is on?
Yes, glad to hear have you join us. Did you get an opportunity to read or to hear Lawrence's poem?
No, I'm sorry. I think I got the last couple of lines, but I was grappling with the gods of the radio again, and they were fighting back.
Oh, I totally get that. Well, when you if you get an opportunity, I highly recommend, you know, after the show, sometime going back and reading it, because it's well worth a read. So,
I will, definitely.
Wonderful, wonderful. All right. Well, up next, we have Secrets of the Night by Selena. And Weaver, would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course. I'll be happy to. My pleasure. Ah, Selena's on the board. Hey, Selena. Here we go. Now, I promise I'll do my best. Okay, but if I stutter, just put it down to old age and drink, okay? Here we go. Whew, deep breath. On the other side of midnight, my soul begins to fly, released from choking chains of daylight's hours. When night breathes into me with a sybaritic sigh, I told you, as raw reality of life, she deftly devours. Dancing on the wind like a seductive shadow, through the sparkling stars, like quicksilver is she, with whispering velvet voices, sweet and low, wooing my weary spirit, which yearns to be free. Invoking my muse, shying away from sight, rousing my indolent, insipid imagination, to enter rapturous realms inhabited by light, replete with reveries of true temptation. No boundaries exist, no fetters to bind, carnal cravings, futile fantasies, which flaunt, partaking in pleasures of a liberated mind, without shame or remorse, to humiliate or haunt. Inner desires belonging to my darker sight, which rampantly romp through skies concealed before the sun sleeps, I have to surreptitiously hide, for the secrets of the night will never be revealed. End poem.
Wonderful read there. And you can tell you're Scottish because despite all that drinking, you barely stuttered at all.
Thank you.
No, it actually was just a beautiful spot on read. I didn't hear a single stutter. And what an amazing write, as always, by Selena. Wonderful imagery, beautiful, delicate use of alliteration with whispering velvet voices, sweet and low, wooing my weary spirit, which yearns to be free. You can tell from this poem, at least it seems to me, that Selena is definitely a person who loves the night, who sees the beauty in the night and the possibilities that come alive at night. And I like how she not only speaks about the night itself, but that side of us that comes out. Inner desires belonging to my darker side, which rapidly romp through skies concealed before the sun sleeps. I have to surreptitiously hide, for the secrets of the night will never be revealed. I like how this, it has an idea of somebody who loves the night, but it also kind of has a nice, almost vampiric feel to it, or a creature of the night type feel. And I like how it speaks on the mysteries and the secrets of the night. So beautifully written and very well done. And Laurent, your thoughts?
Well, here's a person in love with sensuous luxury, I see. No, I had to refresh my memory as to the meaning of sybaritic. I love that first stanza. It grabs me. On the other side of midnight, my soul begins to fly, released from choking chains of daylight hours, when Nyx breathes into me with a sybaritic sigh, as raw reality of life she deftly devours. And deft she is, all the way through this piece. No boundaries exist, no fetters to bind, carnal cravings, futile fancies which flaunt. Ah, that's great phrasing. And the kind of poem that says an awful lot. It's not a brevity, but it's it covers all corners of what some people, most people, I think all people like, really, about the night, and I like the darker side reference. Inner desires belonging to my darker side. It offers us shades of meaning into the depth of the experience that she enjoys. It's a great piece.
Oh,
as usual.
Absolutely, well said there. And Weaver, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Well, you're very kind. I wouldn't exactly say wonderful, but I did my best. That's all I can say. I thought it was beautiful as ever. Really, I just, and this one, I like the idea of the secrets of the night. I was reading it. I'm getting so tied up in it again. I love that no boundaries exist, no fetters to bind, carnal cravings, futile fantasies which flaunt, partaking in pleasures of a liberty. See, I can't read at all tonight without shame or remorse to humiliate or haunt. I thought that was beautiful. It would be even better if I could have read it properly, but there we are. And again, oh, that's a lovely lady, by the way, isn't she? Spooky, spooky. Yes, I really... Thank you. Thank you. My time is up.
No, I'm sorry. You keep going. My apologies. Sometimes I speak too fast.
No, it's okay, honestly. It's not a problem. I'd run out of anything to say anyway, so you were quite right to come in because I was just burbling. But it was lovely.
It really was. It really was. And I think that was a great comment there. And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are this. I love the title. And that couplet, the ending couplet of the first stanza, when Nyx breathes into me with symbiotic sigh, as raw reality of life, she deftly devours. That, like, anchors the whole thing for me. Nyx being the goddess of night, and the whole thing, what he says in those two brief phrases just sets the whole rest of it for me. It puts a whole perspective for me on that rest of the what he says. And I love it. I love it as raw reality, because that's what night brings to us. It brings a raw reality. It takes down all the neon, all the lights, all the safety, all the confidence, all the known. And it takes it down. It takes it down into those shadows, into those shades. I love what is said there. Secrets. It is secrets. Secrets revealed for those who might look for them. So that couplet and that first stanza is everything to me.
Wonderful observations there. Great comment. Thank you, everybody. All right. Up next, we have Tears Have All Gone Dry by Damn It Dave. And Lawrence, would you give that a read for us, please?
I will. Darn it, where is Damn It? Oh, there it is. Okay. Tears Have All Gone Dry. Alas, my eyes no longer cry, though I am filled with pain. I've long since kissed all hope goodbye, as it was all in vain. Though I've grown tired of misery, it's awful fond of me. So it is not a mystery why it won't leave me be. My heart's so full of anguish, and my mind's filled with despair. My faith was built on sinking sand, and life is so unfair. For you will never see me weep, although my smile's a lie. My sorrow may be buried deep, but tears have all gone dry. End poem.
Wonderful read there, Laurent. And as always, just a brilliant rhyming poem by Damn It Dave. And Blue, your thoughts?
My heart's so full of anguish. My mind's so full of despair. I love that. I love how she puts us in the depths there in that third stanza, and that she says, but I'm not going to show that to you. I'm not going to show that to you. That's it. You know, I like that strength that's portrayed there, and I can identify with a lot of that.
I like that. Yeah, it is a kind of poem that's easy to identify with. So great comment. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Yes, this is a very, it's deep and it's sad and it's very true to life. So you can, yeah, you relate to that immediately. You relate to any of those aches and pains and tears and a heart full of anguish. So just, I think he portrays it all so beautifully. You actually feel very sad for this person who's not been able to smile and not has no tears left. So I think you did a wonderful job. Damn it, Dave. I love that name. Every time it makes me laugh, it's so good. Anyway, yes, I thought it was very well written. And as usual, his rhyming is spot on. And it flowed beautifully. Not a stutter in sight. So yes, very well done, damn it, Dave. Damn it, Dave.
Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. Great comment there, Weaver. And Lauren, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
He interpreted the quote so skillfully with a dab hand at the rhyming, which I thought was great. This is much appreciated.
He really does. He really does. He's like, it's like, you know, he just took that quote and just ran with it, like having a kite by the string and, you know, running across the field. This has great rhyme and flow, a strong emotional impact. I really like pretty much all these stanzas, but I will say the one that stands out for me is, though I've grown tired of misery, it's also fond of me. So it is not a mystery why it won't leave me be. I like those lines, the personification of misery and the idea of almost like the metaphor of being in a relationship with misery that, you know, won't detach itself from you. So excellent write and very well done. All right. Let's see what we have next. All right, All right. We have Do Not Look Upon Me by Weaver of Dreams. And we have a SoundCloud for that. So whenever you're ready, Jean.
I'm so sorry.
Do not look upon me. You are pitiful, pathetic, and dewy-eyed. You declare undying love, but will not grant my one wish. A dagger, a moment's swift retribution, my aged husband would be no more, freeing me from that old flaccid carcass that sucks the youth from me as a child suckles his mother. No, leave me. I am sickened by the sight of you, useless boy. Because you are not a man, not man enough for me, I swear. You, who was happy to pluck the rose, until a thorn scratched your soft, delicate, pale skin. Send your brother to me. He may have a backbone. By all means, let us keep this in the family.
Great read and write there, Weaver. You know what? I am so glad you were inspired. This is a wonderful story, right? A great take on the prompt. It's funny because when I read this earlier, I was thinking, I wonder if Weaver and I listen to the same type of podcast. Because I listen to this podcast, Weird Darkness, and one of the stories they do, true, like most one of the things they do is like true crime stories. And there is a story of, and this was true, of this woman back in the early 1900s who had her younger lover living in the attic of their home while her and her husband were living there, convinced him to kill her husband. He did. Convinced him then to move with her, but not together, like in front of everybody, because she didn't want people to get suspicious. So in the new home, she then convinced him to again live in the attic while she got a second husband. And I liked the way my mind associated. I thought, wow, you know, you really get into these kind of characters. And I think that is so cool because I know you. You're such a sweet person. But you kind of remind me of myself where you're a nice person, but you can definitely go into the dark side with your characters. I like how you bring out the voice of disdain in this. My aged husband would be no more, freeing from me the old blasted carcass that sucks the youth of me as a child suckles his mother. No, leave me. I am sickened by you, the sight of you, useless boy, because you are not a man. Great lines and very well done.
Thank you so much. Very nice.
And Laurent, your thoughts?
Oh, you know, it's amazing, you know, when you visualize a person from their voice, and I hear a Weaver, and I do not get the picture of a vengeful person, but boy, you do have a wicked streak, don't you? When you wrote, "Let us keep this in the family," I laugh. And you know, I don't know whether you did hear that podcast that Pam referred to, but it fits perfectly. This is very, very enjoyable, and no, I will never piss you off.
Thank
well
you.
Well said, everyone. Great comment. And Blue, your thoughts?
Well, unlike Lauren, I did not laugh. I see this and I hear this as a real thing. And the rose until the thorns scratch your soft, delicate, pale skin, send your brother to me. I see this and hear this as a woman taking out her boundaries, staking them out, and saying, you were not man enough, so send me someone who is. And I can identify with that, definitely. I can identify with every bit of this. It's written so beautifully, simplistically, but beautifully. It's written. I love the title. I love everything about it. I'm just in love with it. So that's what I have to say.
Great comment, Blue. But let me hastily add, I laughed in appreciation, not because I thought it was funny.
Well, thank you both for your comments. So appreciated.
Absolutely. Great comments and great writing, Kate. All right. Up next, we have Echoes of Stillness by Arcana Amore. And we do have a SoundCloud for that whenever you're ready, Jean.
Okay, Pam, we do have another caller, so let me pick up and see who we have.
Oh, okay.
Hello, 786, who's calling, please?
Oh, my God. Hold on. I didn't know I was on.
Well, you just got on.
Hold on. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, he's calling, please.
Yes, I'm calling. I was on the internet and I was trying to get on, but it said it'd be waiting for the host to call it to come on. So, because I usually come on, I was thought I could get on with my headphones, but I just called in on the telephone. But y'all ain't got that much time left. I kind of missed what was going on.
And what's your name, hon? Are you on All Poetry? Are you a member of All Poetry?
No, I just got a computer. I'm just getting on the internet.
Okay. Well,
I guess he must have dropped by accident.
Yes, they seem to have dropped, and it looks like Laurent dropped. So.
Okay. Well, good night, Lauren. Thank you for hanging out with us as long as you could. I truly appreciate you. And all right. Well, if you don't mind, Jean, let's go ahead and play Arcana's SoundCloud.
You got it. Here we go.
Wonderful read and write, Arcana. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is always appreciated. You know, as always, he does a wonderful performance balancing his reading voice and his background music. Beautiful use of imagery and alliteration. Yet another one that speaks on the beauty and the mystery of nighttime. I particularly like his ending lines, as echoes of stillness fade into dawn, lost in light, the grief stirring eyes, memories linger on morning dew, tears melting into the ether of awakened minds. And I think that makes this a very powerful rite all the way through, is that it's not just about the beauty of nighttime and the different, the sense of awareness that comes out, but it's that it really strongly touches on how, when it comes to grief, when it comes to loss, when it comes to heartbreak, all of that stuff comes crashing into our mind, comes crashing into our spirit, most when we lay still for the night. I really thought this was beautiful all the way through, but another part I especially like was such blissful notions of sweet solace ripple the realms of sinking awareness in a cascading caress of wanton wishes that ride the sailing ships of night. Beautiful lines and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Ah, as usual, beautifully done. The fact that that music is just perfect behind, and the pauses and the, you know, the taking of a breath is all beautifully, what's the word I'm looking for? Choreographed. Yes, I knew I had it somewhere. Beautifully choreographed with the words. So I thought it was beautifully done. I particularly liked "Too Far Beyond Lands of Mellow Moonlight, Past the Sparkling Shimmers of Starry Sky Seas, Through Glowing Prisms of Velvet Skies That Soothe the Sway of Cradling Clouds." I've always thought, you know, when you're in a plane and you're looking down and you see the clouds, they always look as if they are solid. They look as if you could be lying in them like a hammock, more or less. In my eyes, anyway, that's what I've always thought. And you know they're not, but that's what they look like. So this sways of cradling clouds I thought was beautiful. And I also like the fact that nighttime, the darkness, can be so many things. I mean, daylight, you know, you've got sunny or you've got not sunny. Got a bit wet or a bit cold, but nighttime has got so many connotations to it. The darkness can be pleasant, it can be scary, it can be so many things. You know, it can be soothing, or if you're like me and you can't sleep, it's not particularly soothing, but beautifully done, and I really enjoyed it. So thank you so much, Arcana.
Absolutely. Great comment there. Thank you. All right, I'm going to go ahead and put my own poem up and give that a read. And since I don't like reading my own comments, Jean, I'm going to ask you if you'd lead comments. And this is "The Victories," thank you, "of Your Own Epic." And it goes like this. "Bravely raise your sword, raise your shield, never falter and never yield. Marching forward across the land, for freedom always takes a stand. For freedom always take a stand. Freedom of speech and other rights, let both these be your guiding lights. Your quill and ink are striking bold with messages worth more than gold. Singing your songs beyond the stage, songbirds released from gilded cage. Do not waver or be broken, give not your will as a token. Wielding your talent and your heart to rip hypocrisy apart, claiming your epic as your own, let no one else ascend your throne." End poem.
Nice write and read, Pam. Really well done. And Kate, how about you? You want to start us off?
Yes, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Be happy to. And I'm off mute and everything. It's amazing. I thought this was what I love that. First line makes me so proud to be Scottish for some reason. Bravely raise your sword, raise your shield, never falter, never yield. Freedom. Oh, sorry, getting carried away.
Okay, well,
I'm gesturing and everything. It's too much for this time in the morning. For freedom, always take a stand. Oh, I totally agree. For some reason, you know, people seem to need what you've got or want what is yours, and it's a constant thing, isn't it? It can be anything. It can be somebody stealing your song, or somebody taking your job, or somebody pinching from you. But people always want what somebody else has got. And I thought this was just wonderful. Singing your song, freedom of speech and other rights, which are fast going out of fashion. Wielding your talent and your heart to rip hypocrisy apart. claiming your epic as your own, let no one else ascend your throne. Yes, that's very strong. I like it so much. And as usual, beautiful, beautiful rhyming. I like that. Two lines and then two lines. Beautiful. It's always been a favorite of mine. Very hard, but not. I couldn't even see the seam. Seamless. So I loved it. Thank you so much. I feel so much better for it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
You really got me all
You got me all messed up here. I hope you're happy. My first comment of the night, and I'm going, I think that, I wanted to pick all four stanzas is my problem, because each one was just as worthy as the one before. And I'm like, damn, I can't take them all. I'd look retarded taking and copying the whole poem and moving it down into the comment. I don't think that would be, like, thought of too highly, you know. But I think that you went toe-to-toe with this prompt. You know, you really did. You read it, and you went, yep, bam, let's do it. Let's do it. And I think that you aced that. It was just a great take on it. And I find it funny that this prompt is so relevant today, you know, really, in society. But here's what I said. It's a fabulous take on the prompt, Pam. You met the quote toe-to-toe. I want to pick each of the four stanzas. Freedom of speech and other rights, let both these be your guiding lights. Your quill and ink are striking bold with messages worth more than gold. Singing your songs beyond the stage, songbirds released from gilded cage. Do not waver or be broken. Give not your will as a token. I just think you really did a wonderful job all the way through with this. And, you know, it was a short prompt. It really was. What was it, three lines? And, I mean, you really...
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you really aced it. You really did. You made it into so much more. And I don't know if you made it so much more or if you just put it out there so plainly for everyone to see. There was no doubt in anybody's mind what you were saying, you know? They would have had to fill in a few blanks to get the other one your way. So, wonderful, wonderful work.
I like that. Thank you very much. Thank you. Great comment. I particularly liked when Weaver started going into her Braveheart moment. That was awesome.
Oh, I'm so sorry. It's the actress in me. That's what it is. I can't help it.
I get it. All right. Well, up next we have the Nyctophile. Nyctophile. That's it. Sorry, I kind of stumbled over that word. By Julie Buck and Weaver. Would you give that a read for us, please?
Yes, of course I would. Nyctophile. Okay, cool. The nocturnal, a powerful, peaceful part of my norm. I'm up every night, absorbing the dark in its blackest form. It's like comforting lotion to dry skin, to dry thinking. Rub it in, smear it on, and get to seeing all that breathes this time between quiet dusk and early dawn. I'm acutely awake at night, senses heightened, inside a bit more, cautiously frightened. What can I say? I quake and hear and view what never do I in the day. It's not a bad thing to not see when my eyes are open, nor to clearly see when they are closed. End poem.
Great read there, Weaver, and a beautiful write by Julie Buck. It does not surprise me at all that so many poets love nighttime. It really is a time that awakens the mind for many. I really like how she describes nighttime. It's like a comforting lotion to dry skin, to dry thinking. Rub it in, smear it on, and get to seeing all that breathes this time between quiet dusk and early dawn. I'm acutely awake at night, senses heightened inside a bit more, cautiously frightened. I like that she brings in the thought of it's not only how the idea that the senses are heightened and the idea of being cautiously frightened. Like, you don't have to be afraid of the night to the point where it's unrealistic, but there's nothing wrong with being cautious. Like, you know, for example, we get, you know, bears, wolves, coyotes out here, and if I hear the coyotes howling outside, I'm sure as heck, you know, not going to be hiding, you know, under my bed terrified. I'll probably be trying to look out my window catching a glimpse, but I'm certainly not going to send the, you know, go for a walk. You know, it's that idea of wherever you live and wherever you are at nighttime, you know, being that kind of healthy kind of awareness to your environment. So excellent write and very well done. And Weaver, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Oh, yes, this was very good. Again, another insomniac by the sound of it. We're everywhere. Taking over the world soon because we're awake 22 hours in the day. But I thought this was lovely. I mean, this made it seem as though it's a good thing. You know, it's a positive thing because your mind is quicker. Your mind is can concentrate because that isn't usually noise or people or things going on around you at night. So it's a time when you can really sink into whatever you're doing and give it everything you have. You're not having to divide your concentration between what you're doing and cooking the evening meal or what you're doing going then to get your children from school. So, yes, it's a wonderful time, very productive. But it can also have its downsides. You can become quite hyper, which is something you've got to watch out for. But, yes, I thought, and obviously, yeah, cautiously frightened, you were quite right, Pam, about that. You do have to be a little bit more aware of what's going on around you because it's not the same thing as wandering about in the bright sunshine. So you wouldn't go out, I don't think. It would not be a good idea. But yes, I thought this was beautifully written and I really liked the idea of the nocturnal, powerful, peaceful part of my norm. And yeah, very well done. Thank you for sharing that with us, Julie.
Absolutely. Great comment there. All right. And up next, we have Chasing Roses by EminemFan25, and it goes like this. We all have things we want in life, like being loved or rich, and dreams we wish we will obtain before we're in a ditch. It only takes a lot of work to get to where we want. I see no point to sugarcoat and choose to just be blunt. So many people stay at home and drink their dreams away or take a drug to make them numb until their hopes decay. You have to push for what you want and fight through all the pain. So even if they don't come true, experience you'll gain. But there is nothing you can say if you don't do the work because you're scared of falling short or scared you'll just get hurt. It takes a lot to reach your goals. Yet as the saying goes, but he that dares not grasp the thorn should never crave the rose. End poem. A wonderful rhyming poem by Eminem Fan. And Weaver, your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, beautifully written. I like this. Again, it's one of those, I call them bouncy, one of the sort of like bouncy poems where you're going along. It's comfortable and it's great to read. Obviously because it's written in such a way that everything is smooth and every stanza is smooth. So I really enjoyed this. And I can see the point of this. So many people stay at home and drink their dreams away or take a drug to make them numb until their hopes decay. Yeah, it is. There are so many different types of people. There are people who will never give up. People who have a talent and will go to the very ends of the earth to have that talent recognized. There are people who they can do anything and are always insecure. You know, so that this Chasing Roses, I thought, was a beautiful title for this. So I really liked it. And an awful lot of truth in this. People are scared of falling short or getting hurt. So, yes, beautifully written. really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have to agree. And you're right, there is so much truth to this. And one of the reasons, you know, and like you said, there, you know, when the poem says, we're afraid to try, we're afraid to fail, but it's better to try and fail. I really like where it says, you have to push for what you want and fight through all the pain. So even if they don't come true, experience you'll gain. I like how he mentioned, you know, gives us the idea, the thought that, you know, experience is just as value as success. The journey means just as much as the destination. So excellent, right, and very well done. All right, and this one coming up will probably be our last poem for the night, and the others will be carryovers. I'm not quite sure to what show yet. But when I know, I'll let Bull know. So, all right. And up next is Humming Along by Blue Raven. And go ahead, Weaver, and give that a read for us, please.
I certainly will. Humming Along. They say our wind comes out of the mountains, sweeps down the slopes of the Rockies, gathers speed, picks up dirt, then blusters and blows across the flat expanse of the southern plains. I just know it's always here, whispering or howling through the sun-bleached ribs of my soul. I face the wind head-on, the hair-lifting, skirt-twisting force of nature that scours the land and cuts the canyons. I know her song and I hum along, find comfort in this music of the prairie. End poem.
Great read there, Weaver. And as always, a stunning write by Blue Raven. You can really see her love and appreciation for the land. And she wrote to the prompt, my soul is awakened, my spirit soaring and carried aloft on the wings of the breeze. Amazing imagery and metaphors all the way through. I particularly like where she says, I just know it's... she writes about the wind going across the Rockies and down to the plain. And when she gets to, I just know it's always here whispering or howling through my sun-bleached ribs of my soul. I like that it's not just about that she feels, you know, she feels the wind on her skin or she sees the wind, the grass, you know, blowing in the wind. It's that she feels it through the sun-bleached ribs of my soul. And I thought the sun-bleached ribs was really great because you think of the sun-bleached, like, of like buffalo or cow carcasses or skulls that you often see in Southwestern art. And I thought that was just a stunning write, and especially when she ends with the idea of taking time, you know, to find comfort in this music of the prairie. Just a wonderful right and dedication to the beauty of the land in which I'm guessing she lives. Either that or she was just looking at a picture, but it feels like the way she writes it, that she lives in this kind of area. So beautifully written and very well done. And Kate, your thoughts?
Oh, I agree 100%. There's a person who likes me appreciates the wind. I love the wind. I've written so many poems about it and a tanker and everything just because I love it. I just love what it does, how it makes me feel. Just, and I love the sound of it. So Blue Raven got that for me in that stanza where it says, I just know it's always here, whispering or howling through the sun-bleached ribs of my soul. I need to tell you, Raven, by the way, that they have fabulous, what are they? Very sound things on YouTube of the wind howling and in snowstorms and everything. So if I have to go somewhere and I know I've got to get up and I have to have some sleep, I'll put that on and it lulls me to sleep, which is great. So yes, I just think that's a wonderful thing to be able to write like this about the wind.
And yes, I think it has to be somewhere where she lives, because she's got it so detailed, where it cuts the canyons. Yeah, I love that as well. Cuts the canyons. Really good. So thank you so much, Blue Raven. I really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great comment there. Well, this has been such a wonderful show. I really enjoyed celebrating the poetry and works of Anne Bronte and delving into our poets. Thank you, Kate, so much for calling in. It is always fun to hang out with you. Thank you to my Twisted Sisters, Jean and Naomi. And Jean, thank you for everything that you do. Thank you. Oh, sorry.
Oh, that's all right. I was just going to tell you it was a wonderful show and great prompts. Nothing that couldn't
thank
say.
You. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Yeah, and thank you to Selena for hanging on the board, and to Randy and Laurent and Blue for calling in. Thank you to everybody who listened to the show while we're on live or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. Make sure to check out all the poetry contests and topic boards put up by our late night poet hosts and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire. And join us tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Eastern U.S. time on Wednesday, for The Art of Seduction with Gray Eyes Smith, and 12:30 a.m. Eastern U.S. time on Thursday for Headliners Ball with Jeremy F., where we will be featuring the poetry of Teresa Strescoff and Torment King. And have a good night, everyone.
Thank
good
you.
Job, good job, Sam. Thank you,
bye.
Eva.
Now my pleasure, Jean. You too, darling. And Pam, thank you for sending me the invite. I loved it. Catch you all later, ladies.
Bye.